I'll go back to the key man, Scott. All right, thank you. Good morning. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting in the 12th floor of the Capitol today for a work session on case number PU11662. I'm joined by my colleagues, Commissioner Kevin Kramer and Bonnie Fetch, as well as Jerry Lean and Mark Grumman from staff. The purpose of today is just a work session to go through a proposed order that staff has and then see if we have any questions about any particular issues. But with that, I'd open it up for comments from my colleagues.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
All right, thank you. Jerry, I think we'll turn over to you and Mark if you want. Next.
Sure. Thanks, Commissioner. We have a draft order that I emailed earlier that I hope everybody has. And I guess probably if you want, we can just go through it.
Sounds good to me. I don't recall any particular issues that came out during the hearing. So
no
witnesses other than the company's presentation of the case.
Yeah, and we were through it early, and there weren't really anything raised by anybody. And actually, this order is almost totally the company's proposed order. I touched it very little.
Perfect. Yeah, let's just go through it then, Jerry.
All right, the first page, preliminary statement. I won't go through that unless we feel like we need to. It's just a history of the proceedings. And then so that brings us to the findings. And that we're on page 2. And I'll start out just explaining that Elite Clean Energy is a subsidiary of Elite. And Elite is the parent of Northern, well, I guess actually Minnesota Power is a division of Elite. So it's not really a parent company relationship, but Elite Clean Energy is their non-regulated subsidiary that they've just formed for this project. And the wind farm is north of Glen Ullin. And they're basically looking at, let me see, where am I at, 100 watts.
Yeah, I jumped ahead, I guess, maybe to page 3.
I am at 3.2 now.
The project theory was approximately 12,000 acres. Wasn't there something that we had in the hearing about they had defined a larger project area initially and then they were going to pare that down?
Yeah, they changed the application, actually, at the time.
So this number reflects the...
The actual application.
The actual application.
I'll have to check on that and make sure then. Brent, do you recall that one?
Yeah, I've seen my notes, but I think really nothing to contradict what's in here.
No, nor do I. Just one of those things that double check on.
I remember we had another hearing where we did that. There was some areas in the project area that didn't have turbines, and we shrunk it. But I'm trying to recall if there was something like that in this one.
Oh, they did it prior to the hearing, so okay. The application didn't include the initial.
I'll check that.
LOI.
Make sure you're right on it.
Thanks, Chair.
I have a question about the turbines, realizing that the order doesn't need to specify because at the time of the hearing and the testimony, they hadn't secured turbines yet. Do we know if they have yet?
No.
Just out of curiosity, I mean, they have those 3-megawatt direct drive turbines out there now.
Yeah, and the last that I heard, no, they had not.
Commissioner Kramer, we are on the line if you want us to respond to that. This is David Moeller and Dwight Anderson as well.
It's just a curious question. I have no reflection on the order, of course, but have you, David?
No, this is Dwight Anderson. No, we have not yet.
Okay.
We've got discussions going with many different vendors.
So in this one, if you recall, what we did was, what they did was they took the biggest thing they could find and that could be out there.
Yeah.
And
the maximum, yeah.
And with that, the permit would be for 100-megawatt capacity max. with up to 50 wind turbines. So that would be at 2 megawatts apiece. Mm-hmm. So they didn't select the wind turbine. They used 150 meters as a blade tip height. And hub heights and so forth to get them roughly in a little under 500 feet for a total turbine height. You could work it out here with the numbers. It would be 295 plus half of 393.
You know what's in, again, this is just sort of curious discussion, but we're citing 100 megawatts or a nameplate capacity of up to 100 megawatts. We're citing an environmental footprint of up to 50 turbines. Do we really care about the megawatts? Isn't it really the environmental footprint that matters? My point being, what if they were able to get 53 megawatt direct drive turbines and they couldn't put 50 of them up and have 150 megawatts of capacity for that DC line?
That's a good point, Commissioner. And the reason it is that it does put kind of a limit on them. They have to come back in, and we go through some kind of a notice opportunity or something to amend the order in order to make it bigger.
But probably the purpose before of always defining megawatts is when the jurisdiction was with 60 megawatts or 100, depending where it's at. Now that our jurisdiction is more than, what, a half a megawatt?
Right.
So I would agree with Kevin that there's really no reason to restrict it to that. Because, yeah, if they end up with 3-megawatt turbines and they can put 50 of them in there.
See, and we don't even have, not that it's directly pertinent, but we don't even have economic jurisdiction over them. So if they were able to get, you know, if Minnesota, of course, this is a non-jurisdictional part of the utility anyway. But, my point is that why not let them do, as long as they're not higher than 393 feet, that's the relevant issue for us.
Do we care how many turbines they put out there?
Well, I think you do because we do microsite them.
Yeah. I'll tell you what we could do just to make this a little more lenient. We could say
flexible.
I'm just thinking out loud. I'm
a little more flexible.
Flexible, yeah. Not lenient. Yeah. Flexible.
Flexible. We could say a capacity of approximately 100 megawatts. If you're willing to go that far, and up to 50 turbines.
See, they're not asking for more, but I just think, gosh, why make them go through the whole process again to come and put 20, you know, say 15 more turbines right on the same exact footprint that's already been micro-sited,
So I'm fine with approximately, and we could even do that from now on.
Would the evidence support that, Mark? I guess, would the record support that? Is there some reason why it might not support that? I guess.
I think the record would support it.
Okay.
They took the worst-case scenario for 50 turbines.
That's right.
And as long as it doesn't exceed the heights and the noise, if all the ones they defined, it would make sense.
Yeah. So, yeah, if that's cool and if it meets the legal standard, I'd say why not.
The question that comes to mind, though, is what if they use 53-megawatt turbines? That's no longer approximately either. That's 150 megawatts.
I hear you.
Yeah.
No, I know. That's kind of my...
You want the line somewhere or not.
But it's fair discussion, though. We don't really...
The
megawatts
right.
that are being produced. Our concern is the footprint of the 50 towers and the max size.
Yeah. One of the notice criteria is reliability. It is efficient use of the resource. And the continued reliability of the system, right? And I suppose you could argue that megawatts or capacity would get to that, but only on the upside. You know, efficiency is enhanced by more in the same footprint. So
here's one for you. I could say the project is expected to have approximately 100 megawatts. And when we get into the permitting part where what we actually put in the permit, I won't put the megawatt size in there at all.
I just want to, if I'm happy to do that, I just want to make sure it passes the legal test.
I think it does. It's up to the commission, I think, on what you want to do there.
Commissioner, are you suggesting that we allow flexibility in terms of the megawatts, but not in terms of the number of turbines,
right,
so that it wouldn't be more than 50 turbines?
Right.
Because I think if we did that, then wouldn't we have an obligation to go back to notice so that, you know, people may see a notice come out and think, well, I'll let it go. But then if it exceeds the size, they may decide they want to come in and testify.
And what makes this different here is we don't have a turbine size selected, so we're giving them
precisely
a little more flexibility to go bigger on the turbines if they want.
Yeah, so as long as they don't exceed the footprint, as long as they don't exceed the number
and
of turbines,
exceed the size,
they don't exceed the size, all of those are the relevant
yeah
issues to the environmental and welfare of citizen protections.
But the wattage is not.
No.
And you're saying the 12,000 acres, you're not sure about that? You need to go
I
back
to
the record
check
and check.
We think we're
it wouldn't be more than that. It'd probably be less.
Yeah.
Right. If anything, it would be less. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Just one question. Since you're a resident MISO expert, Jerry, I mean, if you look at that, are there any MISO concerns? It's the only thing that I have. As far as kind of what Commissioner Kramer was talking about, system reliability and integrity.
That's the only standard.
I'm just thinking about it, you know, from a worst-case collateral attack type of scenario, where if someone were to try to attack this order, potentially they could look at it from a MISO perspective transmission.
The only thing they really have to think about that, first of all, who are they interconnecting with? Because they're interconnecting with their DC line, which isn't in MISO.
Right.
Right.
And dumping it off over in Duluth into the Minnesota Power region, which is in MISO. And so,
yeah,
I don't know what they need.
Can we do this, Brian, if you don't mind? David, do you see any reason why we shouldn't do what I'm thinking about doing, other than you haven't asked for it?
Just background. I think the reason we put in the megawatt number was for when we did Bison 1 as Minnesota Power, we had a megawatt number in there, and then when we changed our turbine to go to the direct drive, the commission wanted us to come back in for an amendment, which we did when we increased the megawatts because
sure
the permit had a megawatt nameplate capacity. But for this, I don't see any problem with that. I mean, and then as far as the MISO issue, I think we'd still be subject to whatever interconnection requirements.
Sure.
So if we have interconnection requests that only would allow us to 100 megawatts, even if we had that flexibility,
yeah, right,
we probably wouldn't go over that.
Right.
But we'd have to follow the MISO process.
Yeah.
And the DC line is part of MISO. We turned over operational control when we purchased it. So we have to follow them.
Okay.
There's a slightly different queue process for interconnecting, but we still have to follow that. Or early clean energy, we'll have to follow that.
Okay. Well, then I'm very comfortable doing that, providing that flexibility as long as you guys are, I guess. Yeah, because really, he points to our history being that because we put the specific wattage in the order, they had to come back to us for an amendment, even though it didn't change the environmental footprint. Well, let's avoid having to do that.
Yeah, and I think it all revolves around we used to have siting requirements for different
mm-hmm
megawatts. That's no longer there in the state.
That's right. No, that's right.
Okay, so we're up to paragraph 7 now where we describe that we still got maximum blade tip heights and so forth.
Do those maximum? Well, and that would be the 3 megawatt.
That would apply in this.
Okay.
Yeah. And those 3 megawatt machines, if I remember right, they had the same size and characteristics pretty much as the 2.3 megawatt machines that they were using before.
That's right. Yeah.
So we're up to 8 where we basically discussed the turbine foundation and things like that. This is all really the same in all of our orders, just for Bonnie's benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Nine describes the collector station and the interconnect. Ten, it's a good place to put wind turbines.
Jerry, they testified, I think it was in this case, that there was 40% reliability or some number like that.
You know, I don't remember their numbers, but the turbines have been getting better, and they're finding better locations. And as I recall hearing at these different hearings, they've been running up close to the 50% range in some of their capacity.
Because we put that in, one of our orders had that in there, and I thought that that was a, that's a worthwhile number.
That was the McHenry County one, I think, that had that really high number.
Because if we're talking, if we're going to, we could add it into there, if we expect that, you know, the annual wind speeds of, you know,
Let me check the record and see if there's something in there on an expected capacity factor.
I remember asking the question in the hearing. I think they presented it, and I did the follow-up. Are you sure about that? And they said yes, because it was a number that jumped out as a good thing.
Okay, construction expect to take about 6 months. Bottom line, though, is that they don't have a definite plan going forward at this point yet for construction. They're still trying to find a power purchaser. And so they'd like to have their permits in place if they do find a purchaser, so they're in a position to go ahead quickly. Comply with National Electric Safety Code.
Jerry, you jumped over 14. I was going to ask, that talks about safety factors. A minute ago you mentioned the turbines have been getting better. Are you talking better in terms of design, safety features, productivity? What were you referring to?
Probably everything as turbines, as time goes on, but mostly it's design and their ability to get the most efficiencies they can out of them, even at lower wind speeds. So
let me ask some questions about safety. I know there's what is the closest that they can come to a residence? 15, 40 feet?
Well, in this case, the closest that they have, we have a site plan, a layout, and the closest one in that site plan is the 1500 and whatever it was.
40, 1540?
Yeah.
32 on page 6, yeah.
Okay. All right. And the maximum height of the tower, let's see. Had that written somewhere. Is 480 feet?
I estimated that when I told you that. If you look at finding number 7, the hub height would be 295 feet, and then on top of the hub height you'd get one half of a rotor diameter, which is 393. So whatever 295 plus half of 393 comes to be,
okay,
is roughly that neighborhood, 480-something, 490.
Okay. In the event there should be, say, some event that would cause one to fall, has that happened? And what happens if one of these falls?
We generally, in the industry, have something called a fall down distance, which they say is 1.1 times the turbine height. And so that comes to about 500 feet, whatever we could work it out to find out what it
usually
is.
Usually about 410 feet, I think.
It would be a little more than that. But
do these blades ever come unattached and fly through the air and maybe... You know, I don't know what what's happened or what could happen.
You know, as I mentioned before, we've had a couple of incidences now where we've had some blade problems. One was a PPM turbine where somehow or other when they were installing it, they didn't get the butts or the nuts tight enough holding the yoke onto the turbine housing, and the bolts snapped and the whole blades, the yoke and everything just fell off. And it didn't go that far from the turbines, but you know, obviously that's a concern. We had them in, and they explained to us and all of that, and they were back through their whole thing, tightening them. But basically, it was an installation problem, I think. We had another case where we had a blade that failed, and these are fiberglass blades put together with a laminating procedure, kind of like you'd make a bow, like a bow and arrow. Somehow or other, the blade, I guess, more or less collapsed.
Just broke in half.
Yeah.
Sort of peels like a banana.
Yeah, that'd be a good way to say it.
There's a wood piece in the middle, and it just sort of skin peeled right off.
And in that case, I don't believe anything went flying off of it. But nonetheless, it's not good. In that case and in other cases like this, the turbine would sense an imbalance in the blades and shut down their computers that operate it. In that finding I skipped over, number 14, it talks about SCADA systems.
Yes.
They basically are a computer monitoring system that are hooked up to the computer, and they allow it to be remote controlled. And then there's also some automatic stuff that takes place in the event there's the blades are out of balance or some other reason the thing breaks and it shuts down. So they have tried to address these kind of things, but nonetheless, I've seen some pictures and some things, some videos that you'd get a kick out of. Smoke billowing out of them. And
probably not.
Yeah.
We've had actually a lot of discussion on the commission about what's the proper setback, and we don't ever have we never defined anything, but our rule of thumb has been 1,400 feet. But the turbines are getting bigger, so that's been adjusted accordingly. But it seems like the shadow flicker and some of the noise concerns tend to be more of a standoff distance than some of the
we just put in rule. Didn't we just codify it?
Recall when I was testifying on the rule hearing,
yeah,
that I said that we did not get a 1,400 foot. That was not in the new rules,
right.
So it leaves us
flexibility
on that again. So I guess we left that out deliberately.
The fall down distance, Bonnie, is based on, you know, that's why we use 110%, because then you are not confined to a number. And it's based on the theory that if it tipped with the blade at the maximum height, you'd still be 10% away from whatever it is you're next to. In most cases, it's a boundary or a road. These do not fall down. They crumble. When they fall, what they do is if there's some structural problem,
buckle.
The reality is they buckle. So they tend to fall sort of straight down. I don't think we've had any failures in North Dakota, have we?
No.
Yeah.
And falling down is something I've never heard of. I mean, yeah. Other things have happened, but the falling, these are towers are strong, and they've got safety factors engineered into them.
They're
and the foundations
for
wind. Are foundations have safety factors built in too. I mean, the concrete thing in there and everything. But it is possible. I mean, anything can happen. And the industry's had the 110%. There's other things. You know, people have been afraid of ice building up on blades and spinning
ice
off.
Throw.
Ice throw and stuff like that. once again, if you get ice built up on the blades, I'd expect the machines to shut down.
We spent significant time talking about that, how they had ice would actually slow down the turbine until it finally stops. It wouldn't. It's not like it's going to be spinning around high speed and the ice is going to fling out. It just would slow down and just drop.
And so we've.
Well, if that were to happen, if it were to fling ice, I suppose there'd be a fairly lengthy distance to be concerned about. But you're saying that's not what happens.
Not so far.
And not saying it couldn't, again, you know. I mean, anything could happen.
You didn't measure that by this past winter, did you? All right. What about shadow flicker? Brian, you brought that up.
I think Jerry probably has that coming up, don't you?
We do have some discussion of it later.
Okay. Wait.
So... All right, and so where are we at here? We were on going into the siting criteria.
Right.
And these are pretty much standard paragraphs here that we take out of the administrative code and the
I might
statutes.
Just, Bonnie, number 15 is sort of obviously sort of the catch-all that, in terms of safety.
Okay. And I'm familiar with the electric safety code.
If you recall, we had a in this rulemaking here to change the addition that we're enforcing on it. NESC is basically applies to everything on the utility side of the meter. So there's another code, National Electric Code, that is on the customer side that's enforced by the local authorities, and State Electrical Board. So 16 is more or less just a copying of things from the administrative code that sets forth selection criteria, policy criteria, exclusion and avoidance areas, and those are generally what we're looking at when we cite something. I'll let you read that yourself if that's all right.
That's really basically just pulled right from the administrative code.
Yeah, or our description of it, but it's something that goes in every order. And 17 is prime farmland. Generally with wind turbines, they take up just a small amount of prime farmland for the access roads and the actual turbine base itself. And normally, prime farmland is an exclusion area unless the commission finds that the area that's being impacted is small and insignificant. And so we need to find that. Uh, 18 is more on ag production, and it talks about soil compaction. That's kind of an issue, and they need to, if they do compact the farmer's soil, go back in there and cultivate it. Get it broke up again. Generally, that's done. The farmer will do it, and they'll pay him to do it.
You put it on.
Nineteen and twenty is selection criteria and policy criteria, and those are kind of a secondary criteria to the exclusion and avoidance areas. It talks about things like economies of scale, and you can read through those.
Sure.
Community services is also a selection or policy criteria that's for consideration that we talked about in 21. And 22 for avoidance areas on this project. All we've barely got is wetlands, and they're expecting a negative impact. I don't know if you know the area over here where this is going to go, but there's not much there for wetlands. We did start checking in that area over there where there's lignite coal reserves under there that are mineable. And so they checked that out and found out that there's nothing there that's size enough to make it mineable.
Okay.
Cultural resources. They did do their cultural resource studies. And they did get a sign-off from SHPO on it. And SHPO is the State Historic Preservation Office. And we've pretty much deferred to SHPO on cultural resource issues. So the main thing we're looking for there is that they've done their studies and got their sign-off from SHPO. Wetlands and wildlife. Some of this is kind of standard. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service generally takes a good hard look at these things, and negotiates with them, and that's something that we've kind of left up to Fish and Wildlife Service. As time goes on, at times they've come in and actually said these companies is great people. And other times they just stayed out of it. Other times they've come around and done a little flogging on some of the companies with it and give them a little more motivation to cooperate with them. They've been excited over the Whooping Crane Corridor quite a bit, which is something we'll get into if you haven't heard of that later. But it follows the Missouri River pretty much going south through this area, and whooping cranes are an endangered species that migrate through here.
Through this area?
Well, kind of, but more so east along the river. There have been some sightings as you move away from the river. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't raised as a huge deal in this case. I just bring it up because we get it pretty much, especially as you go more east into areas that are wetter. They like to sit down in ponds and stuff like that too on their way down. Fish and Wildlife usually wants them to do some set aside some conservation lands and to participate in this national habitat conservation plan that they've got underway. It's not just here, this whole thing all the way down to Texas from here is their migration corridor.
But you're saying they didn't weigh in on this at all?
I don't recall that we had anything from them on this.
It's an interesting scenario because the Fish and Wildlife Service tends to stay out. It has started to not give their opinion on hearings where they don't have any tie to jurisdiction. And since this is a company that doesn't have any federal funds coming its way, there's no environmental impact statement that has to be prepared, the Fish and Wildlife has tended to stay out of it. Some of our cases, like if it's based on electric, they tend to weigh in very heavily. So my viewpoint, as long as we're following our procedures, we're doing the right thing. But they've been a wild card back and forth, quite honestly.
So you say they want the avian and bat protection plan in place, and they'll clear that with Fish and Wildlife Service. Mm-hmm. wetland delineations in number 28. You need to have an environmental consultant that's certified to do wetland delineations. And they come in and look for wetland areas. Okay. Even though the thing is dry, it might still be a wetland because in some years it's dry and some years it's not. And so you get a person that's certified in wetlands to, if he sees that it's a wetland that, in his opinion, needs to be delineated, he'll go in there and try and find the boundaries of this wetland to make sure that they're staying out of it with their structures and so forth. The further mitigated measures was the setbacks. Generally, that's the fall down height from property boundaries, road right-of-ways, and then there's whatever we come up with the occupied residences. And in this case, the closest one is 1,500 from something in 32.
Do you remember, Jerry, what the road right-of-way setback for Morton County was? It's not any closer than ours, is it? Because we've had the discussion about from the center of the road, we always have wanted the right-of-way from the road, just to double-check that. Because I remember asking the question in the hearing, but I can't remember what the answer was. My point is, as long as the Morton County one is equal to or more than ours, I'm fine with that.
I'll have to check.
Okay, thanks.
Morton County. They did not get their conditional use permit yet, or whatever it is, out of Morton County special use permit.
Okay.
Excuse me. Nope, wait a minute. They did get... Sorry, it's Mercer County they did not get their permit from yet, so they'll get that and have to file that before they start construction.
So this is in Morton and Mercer County, or is that the typo in Morton County? It's in Morton County too, isn't it?
It's in Morton and Mercer. The first 29 talks about Morton County.
Okay.
And then it talked about what Mercer County wanted in 30.
Yep.
31, they had the fall down feet at 471 feet. I'm going to have to check that. The numbers I was telling you earlier. Make me think it's more like 480 something. The occupied residences in 32. I got is approximately 1,540 feet from participating, and 2,360 feet from non-participating. 2,360 feet is a little less than a half mile. We had nobody come to the hearing to say anything, and 2,360 is a pretty good distance.
A lot more than a lot of them.
We're up to 33 now, where we talk about shadow flicker, and there were two residences that exceeded the 30 hours annual, which is kind of a benchmark of what's been used. And they did get waivers signed from those two residences. They were experiencing about 36 hours expected. And You know, the shadow flicker thing is not an exact science. It depends on sunny days, how many sunny days you got, and things like that. There might be trees or something somewhere that blocks some of the residences, some so it doesn't shadow onto them. And, but anyway, they use a computer simulation using an approximate number of cloudy days and sunny days and all this kind of thing to come up with something they feel is an approximation of the shadow flicker. And so there's established programs that do that they run. And actually, the EAPC up here at Grand Forks, UND, I can't remember what EAPC stands for now, if you're energy something. Anyway, they have a little research, energy research thing at UND there that has been running these kind of studies along with some noise studies and stuff like that. A lot of the companies have been using them to do these kind of analyses. So anyway, they have the two waivers for over 30 hours. And in number 35 here, I think I'm going to change the language in that a little bit. It says that shadow flicker exposure at participating residents that do not require waivers. And I'm going to change that do not require stuff because there's nothing anywhere requiring that we get waivers or anybody get waivers.
Right, right.
Yeah.
We just do that ourselves.
Yeah. And so I think what I'm going to say there is we're not asked to execute, if that's all right with everybody.
No, I think that's more accurate, proper.
Yeah. I remembered it at the time. I thought when I was going through it the first time and I didn't get back to it, I was thinking, what could I say better than that? And so I came up with, we're not asked to execute. The next paragraph, 36, is just best management or best maintenance practices for topsoil and things like that, groundwater protection, best management practices, BMPs. That's pretty standard. Uh, 37 is a decommissioning. We have our rules that require them to decommission these things after they're done.
So by I had a question on that. So by saying that, do we don't have to tell them to file a decommission plan. That just one of the obligations is to file the plan. It's happy to glad Jerry, I get it, but the legal obligation to decommission the wind energy facilities. Okay. But is there anything else you need to elaborate on that, or that's enough?
You know, we never did work up a better paragraph for that.
Okay.
But when you mentioned it, I guess we sure could.
Well, I think in their certification, they certify that they'll follow the rules of the commission, the decommissioning rules of the commission, right? Isn't
that
sort
of? Yeah, they
do,
and that's probably why we never went any further than this in it.
That's as long as it's covered somewhere.
The rules require them to file a decommissioning plan. I think they have a year to file it or something like that from the time they get it up.
Okay, thanks, Chair.
38 talks about this certificate related to order provisions. And if you recall, for their previous projects, we gave them a couple of exceptions.
Yeah.
And I'll call Bonnie's attention to that.
Tree mitigations.
And I'd like us to consider doing this in all of the cases as we do this. I mean, they had some pretty good reasoning for changing our numbers a little bit. The first one was the burial depth of lines. They're going to trench collection lines and feeder lines into the ground. And in our standard certification requirements, we require 48 inches of burial depth. But
which is an electrical code standard, isn't it? Or is that even 36?
More like 36, but yeah. I can't remember for sure. I'd have to go back and dig it. It depends on different things, sure. But there's also some language in there that says that are deep enough to accommodate the expected surface usage. Mm-hmm. So there's a little leeway in there that if you talk about plow depths and things like that, if you're going under a field, and you have to take into consideration that there might be erosion and we'll bring it down lower as time goes on, stuff like that. But their reasoning asking for 42 inches was related to OSHA, which is Occupational Safety and Health or something like that, the Hazard Association. What was that, Kevin?
Administration.
There we go. OSHA requires anything over 42 inches that you're digging, if anybody goes into the trench, that they have to have a plywood, like, walls on the trench to keep the trench from falling in on them. That gets real expensive. They don't expect the surface usage to affect anything deeper than 48 inches. 42 inches. We've given them the 42-inch exemption on all of their projects. That would almost seem like we could start doing that in our certification document.
Question is, how did we ever get to 48 if the code is 36?
I think tradition.
We
some early
did,
ones,
yeah.
You know, but you're right. I mean,
yeah,
we've been more sensitive to it probably than others.
It was like, you know, it doesn't hurt to bury it a little deeper type thing, and now they've showed us a reason to class them a lot.
How the I always forget the structures, the concrete structures. They have to remove down to, is it 42 or 48 inches for the structures?
The structure is shaped like this, and then there's a spread under there that goes like this. And they're supposed to, the depth that we picked brought it down to the spread. So they had to remove this.
Yeah, well, what was that? Here. Do you remember if it was 42 or 48?
I have to check.
I think it's 48.
Yeah, it I think there was some synergy back and forth to those two numbers too, maybe.
It might be 48.
I have no problem with 42 in this one. Just it is something we should work with going forward.
And so we'll keep that for further discussion on if we want to do it for everything.
Yeah.
I think Jerry was referring for my benefit because yesterday I showed him some pictures I had taken in Metro Louisville of some of the overhead transmission lines that are unbelievable. You know, I said I never could believe you could get that many lines on poles. Now, bearing in mind they're not all electrical transmission lines, they're lines nonetheless,
yeah.
And the snarl of cables and lines is, I just had to take some pictures. They were just unbelievable. So
and
is that what you were referring to when you were talking about burying the lines?
Well, kind of. You know, those were distribution lines, and they do bury those a lot nowadays in towns.
Oh, what a maintenance nightmare that'd be, though.
Yeah. They don't like burying it that much because it's really hard to find faults and stuff when they do it. But at the same time, they're not exposed to storms and stuff then either. So it's a trade-off on that. but that's an ongoing issue. And just to sidetrack for a minute on that, that has been an issue for us in Fargo. With NSP's system there quite a bit, too, with the tree trimming and so forth.
But these gathering lines at a wind farm are all buried
between
the turbines into the collector system.
I'm going out this week to look at
wind
farm.
Good, yeah.
So that will help, make it more concrete, in terms of visualizing.
You'll see a little box at the base of each wind turbine, and those are transformers, and the line comes from underneath that box and goes underground to a collection substation where they're all put together at. So, the other things that they wanted to change in 38 were in the tree and shrub mitigation, which is attached to the certification document. And they want to change paragraph 2. Right now, it says that the trees to be cleared will be inventoried for replacement regardless of the size. They'd like to establish a 1-inch minimal size at breast height so that you're looking at some sort of a limit on what you're counting to. They want the tree to be halfway established before they take it out or have to replace it. And in, that's in windbreaks and shelter breaks. The other area is number 3 in woods, native growth areas. There they'd have a little bit bigger. We had 1 inch. They'd like to go 3 inches at breast height. So they're not doing the small little seedlings that are everywhere, having to replace them. And we did grant them that in the past, too. And we could consider at some future time changing the...
The whole rule, it's time for a review.
Yeah. It's not even a rule. It's just our...
The tree mitigation.
Yeah. Specifications that we
force landowners to
come up with. Yeah.
Replant trees they don't want.
Yeah.
It's not dissimilar to some of the avoidance or exclusion areas like prime farmland. It's like you can build a Walmart on it, but you can't put a wind turbine on it. It's like,
well, you know,
it's crazy.
In reality, I've got a company right now that can't find anybody to take all the trees that they need to plant. Yeah. I mean,
I'd give it to the. I think, frankly, if it was up to me, I think we should change the tree mitigation plan to say you work with the state forester, whatever he wants you to do. You know, so you can make a donation to the state forester. You can buy 2-to-1 trees, and he can put them, in the state forest or a nursery or something like that. Because then he can the state forestry department can manage the planting of trees in a way that has a greater, more common good, if you will.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, but I'm not going to worry about it today.
No, that is a thought.
So we're into conclusions yet?
Yep, so that brings us up to the conclusions of the law. And these are just standard conclusions paragraphs, so we just pretty much are the same.
Right,
in all
they're
of
just
order.
Derived from the findings of fact, pretty clean.
Every once in a while you find one that isn't, but not lately.
Mm.
These
seem pretty basic.
Yeah. And the ordering paragraphs are the same.
Can we put a cost in here somewhere, Jerry? I suppose we don't know the cost, though we know all the turbines. So.
Yeah, we didn't have a cost, but there would have been an estimate that we used somewhere to set the filing fee.
At least in the letter of intent. Yeah. That's usually where it happens, or right in the application, because they determine the filing fee from
the cost.
Estimated capital cost.
Okay.
But we don't have a good cost. We can put something in where they had in their letter of intent.
Yeah, just put that in where appropriate, because we know that question always comes up.
Commissioner Cock, it is in paragraph 11. We have the $200 million estimate.
Okay.
It's not in the order conclusion of the law. But
all right. Hey, thanks, Dave.
In finding 11?
Oh, in the intro. Yeah. Thank you, David.
Sure.
Jerry, in the order, number 2, Glenullen is misspelled. You might want to correct Ullen.
They've probably been spelling it wrong down there for all those years. That's what the Germans always tell me about Kramer. They refuse to use a C because I'm wrong.
Really?
That's funny.
So it's C-E-V-I-N?
No, yeah, right.
Okay, so the is there anything that would preclude us from voting on this in our special meeting?
If I got it ready to go, I think I could get it on. When is that? A week from Wednesday, right? Or
no, we're doing it the next Monday.
A week.
Is there anything that, I mean, could it wait until the August 29th?
There's no
meeting?
Urgency with it, obviously.
Yeah, we can put it on the 29th.
Okay. If that works better, that's fine. But unless one of my colleagues has something, they.
I don't know.
I think we could put it on.
Either way, it's good by me. But
okay. I don't.
Okay.
I'd probably shoot for the 29th. I need.
All right, that's fine, Jerry.
CNN one for the next one.
Okay, well, we're right about 11 o'clock, so...